members become a primary character in the evening story. Road signs will be at Liberty Magic now through April 3rd, and that's at 811 Liberty Avenue in downtown. For more information for this show, visit trustarts.org. The Cranberry Artist Network presents their first exhibition of the season entitled A View from Above or Below. Curated by Mike Panza, owner of Panza Gallery in Millvale, the works will feature the artist's unique perspectives on the world when seen from unusual angles. A View from Above or Below will be shown at Cranberry Township Municipal Center, that's at 2525 Rochester Road in Cranberry Township, now through April 14th. The public's invited to an opening reception happening in a few days on March 9th between 6 and 8 p.m. If you'd like more information, visit cranberryartistsnetwork.com. And the exhibit Mousetrap is on display at the Silver Eye Gallery. The photography of Patricia Vulgaris and Whitney Hubbs uses the metaphor of a mousetrap to describe images to lure viewers into spaces and ideas that they might not expect. Both artists confront how women's bodies are depicted and perceived in contemporary culture through their experimental, playful, and risky photographs. The show's title presents an open question of who is truly empowered, who is the mouse, and what is the trap. The show is going on now through April 23rd at the Silver Eye Gallery. That's at 4808 Penn Avenue in Garfield. Visit silvereye.org for more information. If you or your organization would like an event included in the WRCT radio calendar, please send the details at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Okay, let's get to the music calendar now. Shows happening this week here in Pittsburgh. On Monday, March 7th, Mouth for War with Sledge, Gates to Hell at Preserving Underground. Tommy Cash is at Craft House, and Utopia is at Jurgles. On Tuesday, the 8th, Deanna Witkowski Trio at Backstage Bar, AFI with Cold Cave at Stage AE, Nane with Moonspeaker at Club Cafe, and the Devin Allman Project and the Samantha Fish Band are at Jurgles. On Wednesday the 9th, Noah Jordan at the Greer Cabaret Theater, Dark Tranquility with Cataclysm and Nailed to Obscurity at Craft House, Letting Up Despite Great Faults, Pat Coyle and Care Package will be at Spirit Lodge, Nani will be again at Club Cafe, Lich King with Greywalker, Stonecutters and Toxic Ruin will be at Funhouse at Mr. Small's. And at Mr. Small's Theater will be Joshua Radin with Towers. Thursday, Kingfly Spirits welcomes James Johnson III. Stage AE host Baby Keem. At Collision, you'll find Godcaster with Samira Mendoza, Justin Kelly, and Shane Anthony, along with Elton Wong, Rue Aubrey, and Gus Engelhorn. At the Funhouse at Mr. Small's, Blunt Bangs with Same. And Jurgles will be hosting Craig Campbell. Finally, Friday the 11th, The Wonder Years with Spanish Love Songs, Origami Angel, and Save Face will be at Stage AE. Devilish Mary will be at Point Breezeway. Velveeta will be at Oaks Theater. The Calm Before the Storm, a night of Irish traditional music and song with Mark Dingham, will be at Club Cafe. The Districts with Francis of Delirium and Vanilla Roma at Mr. Small's Theater. Hippocampus with Jelani Aria at Roxian. Tsatsang with Tim Snyder and Wolfgang Timber at Thunderbird. And Feeble Little Horse with a tape release show along with Gadge and Mercy Lemon at Funhouse at Mr. Small's. If you represent a Pittsburgh-related musician, band, and venue and would like us to list your events in our music calendar, please send email to music-calendar@wrct.org. Okay, enough jibber-jabber. Time to get back to music. Up next, Super Drag with Phaser. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
I want to start today, as we have many days in the last week, and talk about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But I want to zoom out a little bit and take a little bit more of like a systemic, big picture, 30,000 foot view. You know, one of the goals of Vladimir Putin and Russia for more than a decade now in earnest, and you could argue really even longer than that, is to weaken what's seen as the West, the United States and Europe, or, you know, you could sort of characterize it in a number of different ways. Weaken the West, make the United States and Western democracy look weaker or in question or untrustworthy in some way. And the general goal of this is to make Russia look better in comparison. I mean, this is a very basic and sort of crude way to say it. But when you think about the three major superpowers, the United States, Russia, and China, the worse any one of them looks, the better by comparison others look. And so when we think back to the Trump era and we wonder, or we don't really have to wonder, but we think about why Putin would want and benefited from Trump rather than Hillary Clinton being president, and chaos electorally and claims about voter fraud and all these things. Why does Putin benefit from that? Well, when you step back and look at the three major powers, if the U.S. looks silly, if the U.S. looks stupid, if the U.S. looks so ignorant that there are enough people that they would vote for a clown like Trump, by comparison, it makes Russia look better. And one of the main goals of Putin in general is to make the West and the U.S. look worse. And the more fragmented that the West is, the weaker that it appears to be. And unfortunately for Putin, his invasion of Ukraine has sort of accidentally, or as a side effect, unified and strengthened the West to the extent that the West is now very clear, with some exceptions. You know, you turn on Fox News, you'll see pro-Putin apologia. But for the most part, Putin's invasion of Ukraine has actually had the unintended consequence of unifying and strengthening the West. There's an interesting article that you can check out by Holly Elliott on CNBC called "Putin's Always Wanted to Weaken the West. He's Done the Exact Opposite." And the article actually explains, if there's anything we've learned about Putin over the 22 years he's been in power, it's that he has systematically and repeatedly tried to weaken and undermine the West. But in his invasion of Ukraine, he seems to have achieved the exact opposite, managing to unite most of the international community in its condemnation of Russia's aggression towards its neighbor. Ian Bremmer, president of political risk consultancy Eurasia Group, commented, quote, "NATO is united more so than at any point since the Soviet collapse, with a renewed sense of purpose and mission. So too is the European Union. Germany supports ending their economic dependence on Russia and is nearly doubling their defense spend. France is on board. Even Moscow tilting Hungary has condemned the invasion, favored a crippling sanctions regime, and is allowing in hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian refugees. The West is used to Russia behaving like a malign actor over time. It's also widely seen as responsible for it also sees Russia as responsible for a nerve agent attack on UK soil in 2018 and was subsequently sanctioned. And it goes on to explain that this may have been, in a sense, the worst unintended consequence of what Putin is doing. Now, Putin may end up dead at the end of this entire thing. We don't know. Putin may end up deposed, out of power. We don't know. Putin may end up taking Ukraine. We don't know at this point in time, but the way in which this has unified the West over the long term is not particularly good for Putin's bigger picture ambitions. Now, there's another aspect to this, which we've seen at the David Pakman Show, and I've talked to some other independent media people, and everybody's seeing the same thing. Over the last 10 to 14 days, there has been a notable decline in a certain strain of bot type right wing trolling all over our platforms. I'm talking YouTube, Twitter, Reddit, etc. There has been, for the last many years, a suspicious amount of comments like, I'm as liberal as the next guy, but, and then they use some like right-wing argument to try to make it seem as though even left-wingers are skeptical of the American left and all this different stuff. You know, stuff like, I'm a foreigner and I just don't understand why is needing a photo ID such a bad thing for voting? You need an ID for everything else. All these repetitive sorts of messages that we see posted on all of our platforms, they have diminished dramatically in the last 10 to 14 days. Now, I don't think it's because they are all Russian trolls, but we know that Russia for a long time has waged pretty slick sort of disinformation type campaigns online all over the world. And shows like ours have absolutely been affected by them. If you look at any of our platforms, that is down dramatically, it seems, because they are at least to some degree preoccupied with trying to justify this invasion of Ukraine. And the next months, presumably, will give us a sense of, is Russia heading towards annexing Ukraine or installing a puppet government? Is Russia heading in the opposite direction of going in the direction of a truly failed state for a long time with a broken economy? That remains to be seen. But Putin succeeded at calling into question American democracy when Trump won, and then when they fomented the big lie ideas that Trump won again in 2020, even though he didn't. He succeeded at that. He really did. But without a doubt, to some degree, the biggest unintended consequence of the Russian invasion of Ukraine is that much of the West is now as united as it has been in a really, really long time. Putin may end up taking Ukraine. We just don't know yet. And I think anybody who leans on the inevitability of one outcome or the other, there's people who are saying, listen, sooner or later, Putin's going to get Ukraine. I don't think that that's something we can accurately say. On the other hand, you have the perspective that sooner or later, Russia's going to get just absolutely crushed here and Putin will be removed, killed, whatever. I don't think that that's a foregone conclusion either. I don't think we know the answer. But when you see the West as united as it is, it doesn't bode particularly well for Russia. One other Russia-Ukraine story I want to mention. This made big headlines over the last 24 hours. And the headline is Russian airstrike has hit a Ukrainian maternity hospital. The Associated Press is reporting a Russian airstrike devastated a maternity hospital Wednesday in the besieged port city of Mariupol amid growing warnings from the West that Moscow's invasion is about to take a more brutal and indiscriminate turn. Ukrainian officials said the attack wounded at least 17 people. The ground shook more than a mile away when the Mariupol complex was hit by a series of blasts that blew out windows and ripped away much of the front of one building. Vladimir Nikulin, a top regional police official standing in the ruins, said today Russia committed a huge crime. It is a war crime without any justification. This story alone is generating a ton of discussion about what is the truth here. On the one hand, there was the reaction that Russia is now deliberately bombing maternity hospitals. And we saw the hit, the airstrike against an orphanage last week and against a children's hospital last week. So one perspective is they're doing this on purpose to wreak havoc and cause terror. The counterpoint was it is of no advantage whatsoever to Putin to deliberately strike a maternity hospital. What would be the point? Obviously, Russia doesn't think that pregnant mothers and healthcare workers and newborn babies are the ones waging the war against them. So they would never deliberately hit a maternity hospital. If they did, it must be indifference or lack of precision. However, the latest that I've read is Russia is claiming that the maternity ward was being used as a staging area for Ukrainian troops and volunteers, etc. and that there were not actually any pregnant women in the maternity ward at the time, and that when Ukraine says our maternity ward was hit, that it's merely propaganda because everybody knows that it's actually a military staging area. Do we ultimately know the truth? Maybe. I certainly don't know it right now, and I'm open to it being any of the above that I just mentioned. But I think the most important takeaway from individual stories like this are that it is complete and total chaos, and that this is still an optional invasion by Russia. And so it's very easy. You know, I look at these discussions that happen online and people are getting extraordinarily flustered and angry with each other and adversarial over, no, 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 this was obviously deliberate. No, no, no. Obviously, Russia would never deliberately hit a maternity ward. It goes against their strategic objectives and it goes against their PR objectives as well. I don't think we know. And one of the things that we are seeing is when folks get involved in the minutiae, and I'm not saying we don't care whether a maternity ward was hit. Obviously, we do. And obviously, people are getting wounded and people are dying. And 17 wounded is supposedly the number from this particular incident. When you get bogged down in the details, the point is you end up fighting with people, assuming that they're good faith actors. Now, if they're just, Russian trolls, pro-Russian trolls, OK, then it's a different story. But when you get bogged down in the specifics of what happened in this one incident, it's very easy to lose the main thread, which is this is an optional, premeditated invasion of aggression of Ukraine by Russia. And when we end up arguing with people about would Russia deliberately do this if they knew that there were not actually Ukrainian troops there, or if they did or whatever, we end up missing that big picture. And that's the big picture that we have to remember. And quite frankly, going back to the previous segment I did, that big picture of an optional premeditated invasion of aggression by Russia to try to take land or to install a puppet government, whatever ultimately is Putin's goal, that's the big picture that has united the West and American allies and NATO allies. And so we want to know what happened here. We do. And it matters what happened here. It doesn't change the big picture of what's going on in the region. And I think that's the important takeaway. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. One of the popular talking points that's developed among the right-wing media, including Fox News recently, is that Joe Biden is making gas prices higher by not restarting construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. And built into this entire story are misunderstandings about what the Keystone XL pipeline is and what it would do, how long it would take to construct it, as well as the degree to which presidents impact gas prices, particularly when the price of oil is soaring globally. And all of these things are being missed with really kind of it's not even really pedantic. They're just confused talking points from right wingers. One example that we're going to look at right now is Peter Ducey from Fox News. For days, Ducey has been hammering Joe Biden's White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, about gas prices and the Keystone XL pipeline. And he seems to understand very little about it, not surprisingly. So let's look at his first attempt from yesterday, or his latest attempt, I guess we would call it, from a press briefing yesterday on this talking point. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about the truth about Keystone XL.
Because there's a lot of gray area here. Oh. Is a restart of the Keystone XL construction completely off the table as long as Joe Biden is president?
Well, why don't you tell me what that would help address?
I'm asking you if it is an option. You guys say all options are on the table. Is restarting Keystone construction one of them?
If we're trying to bring about more supply, that does not address any problem.
It's supply from Canada, a friendly ally, instead of Saudi Arabia.
We're already getting that oil, Peter. It's the pipeline is just a delivery mechanism. It is not an oil field. So it does not provide more supply into the system. It does not address.
Is it possible that Joe Biden will ever say, you guys can go ahead with construction of Keystone XL?
There's no plans for that, and it would not address any of the problems we're having currently.
Okay, so all of these right-wingers talking about Keystone XL, Keystone XL. First of all, as Jen Psaki points out, it's merely a pipeline. It's not a source of oil. and Canadian oil is already coming into the United States. The pipeline in camp. And here's the most important thing. Now, yesterday on my stream, I asked people in the audience, do you guys realize that phases 1, 2, and 3 of the Keystone XL pipeline are already up and running? When they talk about Keystone XL and when they talk about, oh, Biden stopped it and Trump tried to do it and Obama stopped it, do you guys realize that it's just phase 4 of Keystone XL? 95% of my audience didn't know that. And that's by design. When the right says they've stopped Keystone XL, we're getting no oil. Phases 1, 2, and 3 of the Keystone XL pipeline are and have been up and running. It runs, I believe, from Canada, from Alberta to Illinois and Texas and Oklahoma. These pipelines are already in place. What's at issue when people say Biden stopped it is Biden stopped construction of phase 4. And there's controversy around phase 4 because of how it would go through indigenous land and the indigenous communities that would be affected have not really been players at the table in a way that many of us in the United States think they should be. So Obama delayed it, and then Trump tried to resume that construction, and then Biden stopped it, and ultimately TC Energy, the company in place, has abandoned it. So first and foremost, Keystone XL is up and running. Phase 1 is up and running. Phase 2 is up and running. Phase 3 is up and running. Number 2, it is not a method of supply. It is a method of transport. And number 3, it would take probably years to complete if you started that construction right now. And it would be a very modest amount of oil relative to the total U.S. need. It's a silly, bogus talking point. Even if Biden said, let's do phase 4, it would not solve the problem right now in any way. Ducey continuing to just use these confused different talking points here, trying to do a gotcha around calling the gas price increases the Putin price hikes.
Why did you guys decide to rebrand the rise in gas prices as the hashtag Putin price hike?
I mean, if you want to use that on Fox, I welcome that. But
I think it'll get a lot of airtime because we have heard the president warn for months the gas prices were rising because of the supply chain and because of post-pandemic demand. If you guys knew for months that this was going to be the hashtag Putin price hike, why aren't we just hearing that now?
Well, so, of course, I mean, Jen Psaki's answer doesn't even matter. Again, gas prices can go up at different times for different reasons. And when gas prices started going up at the end of Trump's presidency and they continued going up when Joe Biden took over, it was a global phenomenon as a result of the resumption in demand with the easing of the pandemic. We now are seeing gas prices go up more, and it has to do with expectations. Remember, oil prices are sort of a futures market. We are now seeing it happen as a result of what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, and for supply reasons, et cetera. All of these things can be true. It's sort of like if I wake up one day and I have a headache because I didn't sleep well, and then that night I bump my head, and the next day I have an even worse headache. It'd be like, well, why did you say it was because you were tired on day one? Because you actually bumped your head. Right. On day one, the headache was because I was tired. On day two, it was because I bumped my head. Different causes can have a similar effect. One more example of the confusion around this Keystone XL thing. Here is former Obama economic advisor Robert Wolf on Fox News. And he says this Keystone XL thing would not actually fix the problem we're dealing with right now. And the Fox anchor says, well, that's debatable. And he's like, no, it's not.
All right. So if that's not going to happen, Robert, perhaps, as Peter just reported, perhaps opening up the Keystone pipeline is not off the table for this White House. What did you take away from that?
I think XL is off the table. Let's recall a few things. One, it's the worst type of oil you can have. It's tar sands going from Alberta to the Gulf of Mexico. It wasn't going to really change anything to do with our oil supply. It was to export from the Gulf of Mexico. Also recall that under President Trump, well, let me just fit. Okay, it's not actually debatable. It has nothing to do with oil fields. It's a pipeline, and it was going to end at the Gulf of Mexico. That's a fact. You should look it up.
Yeah. This is the problem. You know how I've been saying to you guys, one of the problems we have right now in American sort of in the media milieu and in society in general is people don't agree about what are facts. Now, the wording I'm using is very important. I'm not saying people don't agree about what the facts are. That would be like, I think, you know, I don't know. What are the facts? I think inflation's gone up and you think it's gone down. Okay, whatever. Like, that would be a disagreement about the facts. People don't agree about what types of statements are statements of fact. The Keystone XL pipeline is something in particular. It's not open to opinion what the Keystone XL pipeline is or where it would have been or how much oil it would have transported or whether it's a source of oil or just a transport method. Those are not opinions. Those are things we can definitively know. And the problem is when the Fox News anchor says, well, that's debatable. It's really not. I mean, you can make an argument that it's something else. You would be wrong. It's not a statement of opinion. These are statements of fact. And just look at previous reporting about the pipeline from when Obama was president. There are actually reports from back then that say phase four of Keystone XL could actually cause a gas price increase in the Midwest in particular, because the oil would be transported through there, but it's not intended for American consumers. The reporting is out there. So they don't know, as usual, what the hell they're talking about. I want to look with you at some record setting clips of a new Donald Trump interview. Donald Trump was interviewed, and to call it an interview is kind of weird because it was just a fluff piece. Ronna McDaniel, the RNC chair, who I guess now has a podcast, she interviewed Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, I'm going to play a clip for you in which I believe in 12 seconds he tells four lies. It's record setting, quite literally. But just to give you a sense of this bizarre interview, here is Ronna McDaniel talking about how great Trump has been to women. I know, guys, I know.
Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being out there. I just have two fun things I wanted to say to you.
This is going
to
be fun, guys. We're about to have fun.
And you're such a wonderful person. You've been so great to women. Thank you for what you're doing.
Trump's been accused of harassment through assault of 46 women, by 46 women. And she says, you've just been so fantastic for women. Now, here's the clip. This is a 17-second clip. Ronna McDaniel speaks for 5 seconds. So Trump only speaks for 12 seconds, and he tells four lies. See if you can spot him, okay? It'll be like a game show.
And you saved hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives with that.
Well, you know, we had in 1917, 100 million people died. I think we would have had the same thing. So we did something that was incredible. We did it in less than 9 months, and it was supposed to take anywhere from 5 to 12 years.
So did you spot the four lies or misstatements there? First, he only spoke 12 seconds, more like 11, but the math is easier if we say 12. He said that there was a pandemic in 1917. There wasn't. It was in 1918. He keeps telling that lie. We don't know why. He's sticking with it. Number two, he says that if it weren't for the vaccines he developed, 100 million people would have died of COVID. There is no serious estimate that suggests that. Number three, he says he's the one who got the vaccines done. That's also untrue. All he did was agree to pre-purchase some vaccines, which any American president would have done in this situation. And number four, he says it were it not for him, it would have taken 5 to 12 years to develop the vaccine. That's not true. With a vaccine that you build from scratch, that was historically the case. mRNA technology has been in development for decades. And the whole point of mRNA technology is you can much more quickly sequence a virus and develop a vaccine in about a year, which is exactly what happened. Four lies in 12 seconds. Unbelievable. Couple other clips from this interview. Here is Trump saying stopping Nord Stream was the worst thing to ever happen to Russia. History buffs will know that's not true.
There was never anybody tougher on Russia than I was.
Now, that's a lie also.
And I would say that Putin would, if he was being honest, he would say that the sanctions I put on, I was the one that ended Nord Stream.
Exactly.
There was never anybody even close. I mean, Nord Stream to them, Nord Stream 2 was the biggest thing. Nobody ever even heard of it until I came along, complained. And then I shut it down. And there was never anything so big that happened to Russia, shutting down Nord Stream 2. And then
now Russia, the Soviet Union lost 27 million people during World War II. And then when the USSR collapsed, one of the just absolute and total economic disaster, I think it's a bit exaggerated to say Nord Stream 2 was the worst and biggest thing that happened there. And then lastly, Trump says the following about how President Xi reacted to Biden pulling out of Afghanistan.
I think that's actually a big reason why the problem you have with Ukraine. I think when Putin and when Xi and when Kim Jong-un and when the Iranians are watching that, the Iranian leaders, I think they saw what happened in Afghanistan. And I think that gave them a new sense of power and dignity.
What is he even? It's a word salad. It's a word salad. She got a sense of dignity from Biden leaving Afghanistan. It's out of this world, guys. It's completely and totally meaningless. But notably, four lies in 12 seconds in that earlier clip. That's one lie every three seconds. That actually, I would have, if you said, David, you have 12 seconds to tell four lies, you need real linguistic efficiency to even make that happen. And Trump does it without even thinking about it. We'll have these clips on our Instagram. Find them at David Pakman Show. We'll take a quick break and be right back. It's great to welcome Tom Hartman back to the program. Tom hosts the Tom Hartman Program and is also author of the Hidden History series. The latest book in the series is The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. Tom, always great speaking to you.
Hey, David. Great to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
So, James Gleick wrote this book, The Information, and one of the things that Gleick writes in the book is that for as long as there has been any communication technology, think drums to communicate over long distances in the African savanna, there has also been the ability to surveil, intercept, send confusing messages to trick those wishing to communicate in that method. And you can sort of follow that with every communications technology up through today. When and how would you say that what we might consider the modern kind of surveillance and lack of privacy apparatus really got going in the United States?
It was in the late 90s. Prior to 1996, the internet operated under the same telecommunications rules as telephone companies. And this went back to the 1930s. To this day, if you're on a phone call with somebody and it's actually being carried over cell towers, it's not a VoIP call, it's not a voice over internet call, because the rules for the internet are now different. But if you're talking to somebody on a cell tower or on a regular phone, for the phone company to listen in, for the government to listen in, for any third party to listen in, they have to have a warrant. There has to be a legal basis for that intrusion. In 1996, with the Telecommunications Act, Section 230 said, we're going to drop that for the internet. So that's one piece of it. The other is, or another metaphor that to kind of explain where we're at, is that prior to 1996, the rules for people who host sites on the internet were very similar to the rules for people who own disco clubs, you know, dance venues, bars, restaurants, or your home. I mean, if you, David, were to put a sign out in front of your house that said, hey, big party on Saturday, come on in and just leave the front door open, and you're sitting in your living room Saturday afternoon, the sun's going down, there's somebody raping a woman in the back room, there's a bunch of people shooting up heroin over in the corner, there's a guy in the other back room who's selling illegal pornography, and the police bust in. They would not only arrest all those people, they would arrest you as the host of the party.
Right.
You have a responsibility for what happens in your house that you know about. And that was, you know, I mean, this goes back to British common law, back to literally the 10th century. So Section 230 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 said that's still true for your house. It's still true for a bar. It's still true for a restaurant. It's still true for a civic center. But it's not true for anybody who builds a house on the internet. And thus, Mark Zuckerberg became one of the wealthiest men in the world. He built a house and he said, hey, come on in and have a party. And he largely ignored the people who were shooting heroin in the corner and selling, you know, I mean, they eventually started cracking down. Obviously, they were from the beginning and on the obvious stuff. But even now, there's just, I mean, you know, this new report that January 6th was largely planned on Facebook. And this isn't just to trash Facebook. I'm not, you know, he's playing by the rules. And that's the problem. I mean, you know, when you have capitalism in a republic, the job of government is to set the rules so that capitalism can work in a way that doesn't damage society. And we have failed in that regard.
So the Republicans during the Trump era talked a lot about Section 230, and some of them seemed to think that if the platforms had greater liability for the content that was posted, that it would benefit the right in some way, I guess because they believed that the left is regularly defaming and slandering and so on and so forth. But they seem to sort of misunderstand the true impact that changing Section 230 would have, do they not?
Yeah, I mean, I think the right's embrace of changes in Section 230 came along with Donald Trump complaining about how he was being treated by social media.
Right.
And they thought somehow if they repealed that part of Section 230, that, you know, a thousand flowers would bloom or something. I don't know. You know, I've never seen the logic in it. Josh Hawley actually wrote one of the better books about the horrors of Section 230. The last half of the book is mostly a screed about how liberals want to destroy America. But, you know, the first part of his book is a really good description of the problems and what's going on and why. And you know, you've got people like Ron Wyden, you know, my senator here in Oregon, is one of the leaders of the effort to change Section 230. But it is bipartisan. Josh Hawley's on board, too. So, you know, back in 1980 or 81, I started running forms for CompuServe. Nigel Peacock, who's still my webmaster, and he lives in the U.K., we were running forums. We had like 30 of them, you know, the IBM PC forum, the Macintosh forum, the JFK assassination forum, the UFO forum, the ADHD forum. We had a whole bunch of them. And CompuServe paid us well. I mean, we had a staff. We had about 30 people volunteer. They weren't volunteers. We paid them who were working with us. And it was a fair amount of money that CompuServe was paying us, because this was before Section 230, and they built this house. It was called, this was before HTML. This was before the web as we know it today. And CompuServe and AOL were pretty much the only game in town. And so because they had built a house on the internet, they had responsibility for what happened in that house. And so we were the ones who were kind of the hall monitors. And in 1996, when Section 230 passed, basically they laid us all off. Or they stopped paying us.
Right. You know, you could keep working, but we're no longer going to. Yeah. You know, that there's progressive, conservative and libertarian perspectives in terms of opposition to the sort of surveillance that we now know takes place. But they're sort of different principles. It's sort of like with flat earth. You talk to four flat earthers. They all believe the earth is flat, but for conflicting and sometimes very, very different reasons. And progressives, conservatives and libertarians have different reasons for opposing the practices that we see now. Can you talk a little bit about those different perspectives?
With regard to Section 230 or just more generally?
More generally.
With regard to seeing things. Well, I think to the extent that And we're seeing this in particular with Republicans across the country tightening the screws on your right to vote, that the for lack of a better phrase, the police state aspect of, because in my book, I basically break out two kinds of Big Brother. There's the state Big Brother, which is what George Orwell wrote about. And then there's the corporate Big Brother, which George Orwell hadn't anticipated, and which is actually at the moment far more aggressive, or at least, you know, the tip of the iceberg above. I mean, you know, Ed Snowden kind of showed us what government was up to. But the right seems to be embracing kind of the police state tactics with regard to voting, and would be or generally are more inclined to not so much embrace police state tactics on the internet, but to say that you know, if the billionaires who are running big social media sites want to do what they want to do, they should be allowed to do it. There's just this reflexive thing against regulation. Libertarians, pretty much the same thing. I mean, libertarians, the Libertarian Party was a scam. It was created in the 1940s by the real estate lobby as a way to provide a political cover for basically deregulation of the industry. And, you know, they thought of it as a scam themselves. I think it still is to a large extent. You know, the idea that a country can work with nothing but the military and the police being provided by the government and the courts. But I think most Democrats are slowly beginning to realize or understanding my party metaphor, really. I mean, this is really what it is that you have to have rules for the game. You know, the NFL defines the rules for football. And if the NFL went all libertarian, they or all Republican, as it were, you know, they could say, they would probably change their rules to say, well, you know, whichever team gives the biggest contribution to the guys on our board of directors gets an extra player on the field throughout the game. You know, we can tweak things if there's enough money involved and that kind of thing. That's sadly, and that's what they've done. I mean, you got Rick Scott's new 11-point plan promoting deregulation of the polluters, right? Because they're big campaign donors to the Republican Party. So, with regard to privacy in the United States, I think the dynamic is just very similar, David.
When it comes to, in Europe, we've got the GDPR. California passed the Consumer Privacy Act in 2018, so at least people know what personal data is being collected about them. Are those types of laws significant and impactful, or do they give people maybe some kind of false sense that something is being done?
They are significant. They do have impact. Those laws are why when you visit websites that want to do business in California or in Europe, they will say, "Will you accept cookies?"
Right.
It's like a flag. It's a way of saying, "Well, yeah, there is something going on here. We are sort of spying on you or keeping track of you, or you know, or maybe it's just to help your experience." And in some cases, it is actually. But in any case, I think that's something that we need to, you know, really seriously look at is the, in particular, the European rules. And the one, there's a whole chapter about this in my book in Europe that we definitely do not have here is the right to be forgotten. This came out of a 2018 lawsuit, or maybe it was 2008. No, I'm sorry. I'd have to look up the year, but you know, there was a Spanish guy who discovered that whenever he Googled his name, he had gone through a rough divorce and bankruptcy back in like 1998 and lost his property, lost his business. And when he Googled his name, he had a real low profile guy. And when he Googled his name, that was pretty much all that came up. And it looked really bad on him, you know, and it was impeding his ability to get a date and find a job. And so he asked Google to delete that from their search, you know, things that came up when his name was put in. Google kind of laughed at him. He sued in Spain, and a European court went along with him. And now you've got, you know, the right to be forgotten across Europe, where if you don't like what is being said about you on the internet, you can't necessarily always petition individual websites to take down the content about you, but you can ask the search engines to no longer deliver it to people. And that's a pretty consequential thing. And I know a lot of people in the United States would probably very much appreciate that, particularly people who have been the victim what's the phrase for when mostly men are outing, you know, old girlfriends with porn pictures and things like that.
Oh, yeah. What is the term for that? I don't remember the term. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like revenge porn, I think. Is the phrase. Yeah. So that's something that we should seriously look at as well.
If last thing I want to touch on, if the direction that things have been going isn't resisted in some of the ways we've talked about and that you write in the book, what's sort of at the tail end of it? I mean, is it the direction of like the Chinese social credit system? You know, everybody has some different idea of what they believe would be sort of at the end of this. What do you think would happen if this goes unopposed?
We already have a business version of the Chinese social credit system, and there are companies that brag that they have 10, 15, 20,000 data points on every single one of us. They know our most subtle preferences. They know if we've, you know, for example, if they're providing information to a company that's trying to decide whether to answer your customer service call in two rings or in 2 hours. You can tell that company if you have recently browsed the website of that company's competitors. So are you one of those people who's calling in and saying, "Hey, I'd like that price match"? Well, you get to wait 2 hours. Or if you're a regular customer of that company, you know, it's just really, really granular data. Yeah. and some of which could be used to, you know, basically harass or embarrass people as well as to increase the profits of companies. So, and similarly, there are companies that specifically market, you know, this kind of social credit score. And it's not just your finances. It's not just whether you paid your credit card on time. It's, you know, whether you've ever been arrested for drunk driving or whether you've ever been in an altercation with anybody or, you know, how you behaved online in some cases. They're selling this information to employers. They're selling this information to landlords. They're selling this information to retail companies. They're selling this company to companies, you know, to cell phone companies and airlines and everybody else who get calls from customers. There's the potential for abuse is extraordinary. And I'm not saying that it's not appropriate to do that. You know, if I was a landlord, I would like to know if the person who wants to rent an apartment trashed the last one and left sure. dog poop all over.
Right.
You know, that's not unreasonable. But there have to be reasonable limits on this stuff, and there are none right now.
The book is The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. The book's author is Tom Hartman. Tom, always appreciate your time.
Thank you, David. It's always a great honor and pleasure to be here with you.
All right. Well, we have very, very big news. Another one of these Trumpist election clerk official type people has been indicted. I'm talking here about Tina Peters. We've spoken about Tina Peters before. County clerk who embraced the big lie is indicted months after an election data leak. This really is a delightful story. Talking Points memo reads, Tina Peters, the Republican clerk of Mesa County, Colorado, who was long suspected of aiding a leak of sensitive election machinery data from her own office, has been indicted on multiple counts by a Colorado grand jury, as has her deputy, Belinda Nisley. According to the indictment, Peters and Nisley allegedly devised and executed a scheme to breach security protocols that led to the distribution of confidential information from county election systems. Guys, the calls are coming from inside the house. To carry out the scheme, the indictment alleged, Peters committed criminal impersonation against a Colorado man whose name was used for an access badge for county election offices. The charges against Peters, this is just delightful. The charges against Peters include three counts of attempting to influence a public servant, one count of conspiracy to commit attempt to influence a public servant. Weird language, but I think that's the way the law is written. Criminal impersonation, conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, identity theft, first degree official misconduct, violation of duty, and failing to comply with the Secretary of State. Guys, this is what they say Democrats do to steal elections. There's another article from Ars Technica. Republican county clerk indicted in voting machine breach, arrest warrant issued. Tina Peters indicted on 10 counts for, quote, deceptive scheme to leak confidential data. This was long overdue. Tina Peters showed up. You know those pillow fests? Mike Lindell from MyPillow. He was a big supporter of Tina Peters. And this is way overdue. There is a clip which we previously looked at on a live stream in which she was arrested in public. It's just so delightful to see it and hear her officers taking her into custody. She's screaming. Let go of me.
Let go of me. Give me my kick.
And now she's starting to kick like a threatened horse.
Yes, you are. Give me my key to my car. Give me my key to my car. Give me my key to my car.
All right. So she was publicly taken into custody. It was just fantastic. And by the way, she's running for Secretary of State of Colorado, and she had the audacity to put out this video yesterday in the midst of everything that's going on.
Hi, I'm Tina Peters. I'm currently the clerk of Mesa County,
yeah.
and I've announced that I'm running for the office of Secretary of State in Colorado. Since then, I've been crisscrossing Colorado, speaking to various civics groups, including Republican Lincoln Day dinners, and I've been so honored by the overwhelming response. I'm running for Colorado Secretary of State.
Is it wrong that I take pleasure in this horrible woman going down? And, you know, I'm not one to celebrate bad things happening to people, but she's accused of doing not only really bad things, but she was part of spreading the big lie that everybody on the left was meddling with elections. It was Democrats. It was Joe Biden. It was whoever. She was involved in a conspiracy scheme, per the charges, related to elections in her role as the county clerk. I'm sorry, guys. I'm taking pleasure. I'm taking pleasure.
To restore trust and put an end to government overreach in our election process.
Trust.
We need to get back to honoring our Colorado Constitution, honoring our state legislature, to craft laws through a representative government by, of, and for the people.
Yeah. She's been arrested. She has now been arrested, taken into custody, and it's all absolutely fantastic. Law and order, guys. Law and order. That's the important thing. Speaking of law and order, radical Trumpist Republican Congressman Madison Cawthorn has been charged for driving with no license. Here's the key word. A second time. North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn charged with driving with revoked license for second time. He now has a court date. Congressman Madison Cawthorn has been charged with driving with a revoked license, a misdemeanor that carries up to 20 days in jail. The 26-year-old Republican was pulled over March 3rd in Cleveland County, about an hour and a half southeast of Asheville, by the Highway Patrol. Along with the misdemeanor, Cawthorn is facing two pending citations for speeding in different counties. Highway Patrol spokesperson Sergeant Marcus Bethea said March 9 he could confirm that the three citation numbers are pending matters. The Cleveland County stop happened around Shelby. Trooper Tyler Gant saw a 2019 Toyota truck cross the center line. Not, you know, pretty reckless driving. The driver was identified as David Madison Cawthorn. I guess Madison's his middle name. During the course of the investigation, it was determined the driver's license was in a state of revocation. He doesn't have an actual valid license. He was charged with driving while license revoked. They claim to be about law and order, and they're not. They claim that it's the left that's doing all the election stuff, but it's actually them. And in particular, and this is not a joke, when it comes to motor vehicle stuff, you would think that Madison Cawthorn would understand the consequences of irresponsible driving, unlicensed driving, all this stuff. He's in a wheelchair because of a car accident he was involved in when he was younger, in which, if I recall correctly, his friend, the driver, fell asleep. And I'm not even going to speculate on what that means. Fell asleep can mean a lot of different things when it comes to traffic accidents. And he is regularly speeding, crossing the center line, driving with no valid license. Guys, come on. It's the double standards and the hypocrisy. I know they don't care about them, but at a certain point, it's almost like a skit. They are such hypocrites. No word as to whether he pulled the "do you know who I am" sort of game. But this is a guy who regularly, you know, to say he's deliberately breaking the law, we would need to know his state of mind. But he's at least at minimum accidentally breaking it. Remember when he tried to bring a gun on a plane? He had a gun in his carry-on and he tried to bring it on a plane. Oh, he forgot where it was. Oh, no, it's just he's a congressman, sir, responsible congressman. Well, if you forget where your gun is, that doesn't sound like responsible gun ownership. One of the principles of responsible gun ownership is you should always know whether the gun is loaded and you should always know where the gun is. The gun was in his carry-on. He didn't believe he was not aware that it was in his carry-on. That's negligence. But always, these are just accidents. Who's he going to blame for this one? Antifa, Black Lives Matter, critical race theory, Joe Biden socialism, or maybe transgender kids, or George Soros? I don't know. The party of personal responsibility, very quick to say these were accidents and certainly someone else is actually to blame here. So second time caught driving without a valid license, Madison Cawthorn. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. Now, many of you will be familiar with today's caller. Today's caller is the San Antonio troll. The San Antonio troll is known to me, and probably to some of you, for calling in and delivering blistering criticism directed at me for things I never said. And that's exactly what he does today. Typical of the San Antonio troll.
You know, Pac-Man, I watched your coverage of the State of the Union, and I just can't. You progressives are the most out of touch people on the freaking planet.
Okay.
And what's funny is most of y'all are just pundits, you know, who live in nice neighborhoods, gated neighborhoods, and
gated neighborhoods.
You don't really see. I thought Biden did a good job. I think he's done a good job so far.
That's fine. That's totally respectful. Okay.
And I think his State of the Union was great. And I am absolutely prepared to vote for a Democrat in 2024.
I don't know if the San Antonio troll is serious about that, but okay.
I mean, who's going against Ron DeSantis? Come on. Who are we kidding here? Having said all that, you complain about Biden wanting to bring energy production back to the United States. Whereas you don't see that it hurts the working, these gas prices hurt the average person.
Now, this is where the troll goes off the rails. I did not criticize Joe Biden wanting to bring energy production domestically. To be honest, I don't even know if Joe Biden mentioned that. What I spoke about was Joe Biden offhandedly saying, we're going to build and manufacture everything here in the U.S. and buy American. And as I've said before, when Donald Trump has said things like this, as I said before, when Barack Obama said things like this, the kind of casual nature with which elected officials say this ignores the reality that our economy is based on not making stuff here. We have decided implicitly through our decisions about trade and regulation over the last 20 to 30 years that we prefer as a country, I'm not saying you or I prefer it, but we prefer as a country to have lower prices on stuff and to make it abroad. And so when politicians, they all do it. They say, we're going to make everything here. It could take decades or longer to reconstruct the supply chains domestically to do that, number one. And number two, everything would get way more expensive. So when the San Antonio troll says, I was against Biden doing domestic energy, but I don't remember Biden even talking about that. I was talking about manufacturing domestically, not gas. So again, troll, criticize someone who said it. It wasn't me.
We don't have a bottomless bank account like you do and other elites where you can just catch an Uber ride everywhere you go. So we feel it at the pump and we are.
I've been all over the gas price thing. And I've been saying this is not 15 cents per gallon. We're talking about impactful amounts of money now. So I don't know. This guy must have me confused with someone else. Maybe Alex Jones was saying this stuff. I don't know.
The majority voted. This is why Biden has to do this or he's definitely going to lose. And you just don't see that. You see, we need to be complete green energy because you drive a car that's, you know, not all of us can afford that, dude. You have to see it from the poor man's perspective.
I genuinely don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what commentary of mine this is even a reference to.
Not even the poor man, just the working class. And it's something I think you've lived in this, you know, wealthy liberal, wealthy neoliberal bubble for so long.
Oh, give me a break, dude. Yeah, go talk to someone who said this stuff. So there's the San Antonio troll. I am still holding out hope that someday, I believe it will happen. The San Antonio troll will call and actually address something I've said, as opposed to something he attributes to me that I've never actually talked about. A Florida Senator Rick Scott's tax plan is under fire, and it should be, and we're going to talk about it on today's bonus show. A couple months ago, I told you about the first successful pig heart transplant into a human. Sadly, the recipient, an American man, has died, and we're going to talk about what this means for this particular medical technology. What happened? It is sad, but we're going to follow up on the story. And the final remaining American mask mandate is in Hawaii, and that will be lifted in 16 days on March 26th. We will talk about now with state mandates all going away, which municipalities are maintaining masking requirements, if any, and we'll talk about masks. All of those stories, or as Marjorie Taylor Greene likes to say, we will talk about mask on the bonus show. All of those stories and more. I will be joined by producer Pat on the bonus show. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. It is a great place to sign up. I believe the normal membership prices are perfect, but you can get a discount using the coupon code WOW22. Now, just remember, you will be adversarial to Alex Jones if you sign up as a member. Alex Jones doesn't like the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
He's against it. I am very much for the bonus show. Sign up at Join.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun? Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Where people can get out and humanitarian aid can get in, any attack on civilians is violation of international law, is a war crime.
As Russia escalates its attack on Ukraine, NATO is calling on Russia to halt attacks on civilians. The United Nations says more than 2.5 million people have now fled Ukraine over the past 15 days. We'll speak with a leading Ukrainian environmental lawyer from the western city of Ivano-Frankivsk, which was just bombed today. She just co-wrote a piece titled, "The Ukraine War is a Decision Point. Banks should stop funding the fossil fuel industry forever." Then we go to the besieged southern Ukrainian city of Mykolaiv.
The situation is not very good because every day there are artillery working on against our city. Like they bomb civilian houses where people live.
We'll also talk to retired Colonel Andrew Basevich, president and co-founder of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He says the United States cannot absolve itself of responsibility for the catastrophe in Ukraine. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russia's withering assault on Ukraine has entered its 16th day. New satellite images show a column of Russian tanks and armored vehicles has dispersed north of Kyiv for a possible ground assault on the capital. Earlier today, Russian airstrikes hit the city of Dnipro in central eastern Ukraine, killing at least one person. The airstrikes reportedly hit a kindergarten, an apartment building, and a shoe factory. Long-range Russian missiles also hit airfields in two western cities. Some 400,000 people remain trapped by Russian forces in the besieged city of Mariupol. People said they've endured near-constant artillery attacks amidst freezing temperatures with no heat, electricity, or communications, food and water in short supply.
There is nothing here. It's the first time that we've got bread and food here. There was nothing before. It's the first day. There's no information, no electricity. It's just a vacuum.
My children are in Mariupol and near Kyiv. I don't know. There is no mobile connection so far, so we can't get in touch. For 2 weeks, we don't know what is up with them and where they are, our children. It's very scary.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his government's working to secure humanitarian corridors for civilians trapped by fighting. He said Russian forces targeted an evacuation route Thursday in southeastern Ukraine.
Today, they destroyed the building of the main department of the State Emergency Service in the Donetsk region. Right next to this building was the place where Mariupol residents were to gather for evacuation. This is outright terror, blatant terror, from experienced terrorists.
The UN's nuclear watchdog says the situation at the former Chernobyl nuclear power plant's deteriorated.